I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Gluck. I'm along with my coworker Jordan Bianchi, who is at Atlanta Motor Speedway, aka New Atlanta, aka Atlanta Super Speedway. I'm at home in Denver, Colorado right now. But man, I tell you what, Jordan, for much of that race today, I was like, glad I'm not there that one. This race sucks. And I was getting mad and I was messaging you about how sour I was and how this is going to be a terrible podcast. Thankfully, I'm not saying it completely redeemed things and changed everything, but the last 44 laps were a breath of fresh air in terms of good racing, a great sort of classic duel between two of this generation's best super speedway racers, best super speedway spotters, you know, head to head, straight up, great moves, clean, respectful racing. I liked what I saw the last 44 laps. I don't know if it redeemed the whole thing, but at least, that was a good memory from this race.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. I mean, I was messaging during the race. The first two stages, I just didn't think were very good. Like, you didn't really see much passing, and one driver, a couple drivers, tend to dominate. And then stage three was so 180 degrees different than the first two stages. The bottom line came in, you know, whether that was just because it came in on its own or the fact that some guys were trying to save fuel running the top line, and they weren't running 100%. Depends on who you talk to there. And it just was a whole different race. And that you mentioned it, but that duel between Brad and Joey over the last 20, 30 laps. And that was as good as it gets on a super speedway. It was like two chess masters kind of, you know, knowing what the other's going to do and just listening to them on the radio was a fascinating, it was really educational.
Who did you listen to?
I flipped between them. I kept going back and forth. I didn't have just one. I even listened to Blaney quite a bit too, because I wanted to see what he was kind of doing and everything. And I actually talked to Ryan Blaney post-race. And I said to him, I said, was it weird watching, you know, your current teammate and your former teammate who's taught you so much race each other, you know, on a super season? Like, oh yeah, it felt very much like I knew what they were going to do before they did it. And it felt like the old days of Team Penske. And so it was fun. It was really, that was great. I mean, as bad as that first two stages were, that last stage, especially the last 30 laps or so, were phenomenal.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I felt kind of icky, gross, liking it, enjoying it, because I'm still opposed to sort of the entire concept of Atlanta being a super speedway. And I felt like I was pretty justified after watching the truck race, the Xfinity race, and the first two stages of the Cup race. Like, yeah, this was a bad idea. But then, you know, then you see this great third stage, or at least the last half of the third stage, and you're like, oh, that was good. So, you know, I still don't really know how to feel about it, but again, like the duel that they had, and I listened to TJ Majors, because I thought Keselowski was going to win it, and I wanted to get as much sort of color. That's what, you know, in journalism they say, you know, they call it color for your stories, where you're adding, you know, sort of the details and stuff. And I wanted to get as much color as I could, for the story that, you know, I thought he was going to win his first race in 2 years. It was going to be a big statement win for RFK, a big statement win for him, you know, beating his former team also at the same time. There was sort of a lot there that you were seeing, oh, this could be really, you know, back in the playoffs, all that kind of stuff. And it really looked like he had it. And it really speaks to Logano, you know, his, just sort of his never give up nature. I mean, really, a lap and a half to go, I'm like, ah.
He's done.
Yeah.
He's like, that inside line fell back. Mm-hmm. With six to go, Brad made the pass to, he finally cleared He finally, at they ran side by side for about seven laps. And on lap with six to go, he Brad finally cleared Joey, and that inside line just fell back. And like you, I'm like, this is it. It's over. Like Brad, at least it's over in the sense that Joey's out of it. And Brad, now it's going to be up to Brad to see what he does. Is he going to hold off the Toyotas? And I felt like he was in a good spot there to do that. And so it was fascinating to watch. I went back and actually watched the last two laps just to make sure I had it right, to watch how Joey kind of dissected it and everything. And he said like a lot of things had to kind of break his way. I talked to Coleman Presley, Joey's spotter, and he's like, listen, you know, we did everything right, but also we you know, things had to fall our way with the Toyotas kind of starting to race side by side. And he had one move Joey did where he slid up the track, and it was like he barely cleared, I think it was Reddick, and it was like, whoa. And that was it, because that was just enough to get him up top and then with some momentum to kind of get by Brad.
I think that was Bell, because then yeah, Bell comes down on the, you know, and gives him the big push. But so that was what was fascinating about it, because, you know, like you said, you're really thinking, okay, Logano's pretty much out of this. Okay, it's coming down to the Toyotas. Bell made his move earlier, he made it too early, or at least earlier than Reddick expected him to make it. And Reddick, you know, so that sort of broke them apart. And all of a sudden that sort of cost Kozlowski some momentum, because he didn't have his help as much out front. And then so then Logano's coming up, but that move you're talking about was, because I was kind of the same way, right? Like I'm watching the last lap and then Logano suddenly is there and winning and in the lead. I'm like, what? How that happened? Like, I wasn't even really paying. I wasn't really focused on Logano. I was more focused on the Toyotas and Kozlowski at that point. So then when they showed the replay, the overhead shot, and especially when you see that move where Logano is on the bottom and he squeezes up there, and then it looks like, so Kozlowski looks like he goes up the block like he'd been doing. And, you know, he kind of comes back down. Logano stays up and keeps going with more momentum and just keeps riding it, especially once he got that, the big shove from Bell too. But, you know, that was just like, wow. I mean, what a move that was. That's not the kind of thing where you can, I don't even know how he made that. You know, that was just like, wow.
And that's why I kind of bristle when people say super speedway racing is a lot about luck. And I'm not saying there's not a component to it, obviously, because there is, and you got to hope that you don't get caught up in the big one. But you look at these guys and the moves they make and how they make them and knowing when to make them, like, and you listen to them on the radio, whether it's the driver or the spotters, like, there is a skill to this. Like, it is an undeniable skill. And you can't say watch Brad over and Joey over those last 20 laps or so and not be amazed by how good they did in that situation where there's no margin of error. And they were doing everything perfectly. And Brad, too, really, once he took the lead, even, like, in holding off everybody, like, that is – it was really good. I thought the Fox broadcast at the end, I thought Boyer and Stewart did a really good job of kind of breaking that down and kind of explaining why that's a talent. And I think that often gets overlooked.
I mean, yes, I do think it is definitely, it's undeniably a skill to win these races, right? Like where you have to really make those moves at the end, really control the line, or, you know, if you're not in control of the race, try to figure out, okay, how am I going to get it? Like, you know, Joey's sitting there, and as well as he knows Brad, I mean, Brad and TJ, you know, you're just listening to it. You're like, how is anybody going to get by these guys? They are in so complete control of this race. TJ is doing such a phenomenal job with telling Brad exactly where the runs are coming from and, you know, saying, okay, like even when Brad wouldn't be out front and TJ would be saying, okay, here comes your help. He's going to have a push. You're going to have the lead here in a few seconds. And then he would go out, you know, just stuff like that. So I'm thinking, well, you know, as good as Logano is, how's he going to figure out a way around this? He ends up doing it. But, you know, in terms of just the racing in general, you know, again, and this is goes back to, okay, we gave up a mile and a half track, with sort of the more traditional racing to see this. And, you know, how many of these guys get out of their cars and go, yeah, you know, wasn't really anything you could do. It wasn't really in our control today. You know, I'm looking forward to next week because we'll have more control back again. You know, that just, again, I get the Talladega Daytona thing. Those have been there long enough that I'm not being like, oh, I hate this. You know, four times a year is fine. But when you take a existing track, now, of course, people, you know, it had boring racing, at times, people felt like, but I would have liked to see how the next gen car performed on the old configuration, as good as that car has been on mile and a half at times. So, you know, again, you know, 2021, when we were talking about all this on this podcast, we were bummed because once you do this project, you can't go back. You can't, if it doesn't work. Now it's worked better than I thought. I did not even think that was going to be a super speedway. They were even going to have that type of racing, and be able to do it. But still, I mean, there's a place for it. I just don't know if this is the place. I'm not saying it's the same way I feel about Bristol Dirt, but it's just, you know, you're just like, okay, all right, yeah. Again, if the whole race was like the last 44 laps or something, you're like, oh, well, okay, yeah, I could see why they do this. But, you know, it was a three-hour race pretty much. And, I mean, for 2.5 hours, you're waiting until you get to the good part. I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this. I'm so conflicted still. I have this inner conflict about what to feel about this whole project and this whole process.
Yeah, but so to me, it reminds me a lot of Fontana, though. And like, if you could tell me that you could have the old Atlanta with the bumpy surface and the really where a driver really could make a difference and tire wear, I'm all for that. I love that. But this place needed to be repaved. And I said it then, I'll say it now. If you're going to repave this track, like, there is a good chance you're not going to end up with the same Atlanta that you had that everybody loved. And so I was okay with them doing something different. I don't know if I would have made it a super speedway. I would have gone in a different direction. I would have probably made a short track. I've said that before, 3/4 mile short track, but what do I know? So I don't know. I go back and forth on it. I really liked what I saw that last stage. I would like to see more of that. I kept thinking about last year's race. I actually went back and read what I wrote after both races last year, because I was like, how did I feel about it? I liked what I saw last year. I was encouraged by it, but it's a point is like, what happens when this wears off, right? The novelty wears off. Are these cars get kind of zeroed out and there's, you know, they start spacing out a little bit and like that. And then you don't have the draft and you don't maybe have the side-by-side racing. I don't know. I'm curious to see. I thought we were seeing that today, that the first two stages looked like a lot of people just couldn't pass. And then that third stage was so different. So I don't know. It was also wickedly cold here today and really windy. And I wonder if that had something to do with it.
Well, I mean, yeah, eventually it is going to wear out to the point where they're not going to be able to have this type of racing that you needed, because you need a pretty large degree of grip to have pack racing. And so it is going to get spread out maybe within a few years. And I mean, knowing how the summers are in Atlanta and all that stuff. I mean, we saw, you know, the age that the last track had, you know, it might take 4 or something years, but it's not going to be like this going forward. In fact, you would almost think that every year would get a little bit less of the pack style racing. So then what do they do? But I would say that in the meantime, I feel like I'm in the minority, right? Like, I feel like, now there's, you know, it's split. I think there's a decent amount of people that agree and feel the same way. But when you look at the crowd there today, I thought for like the Atlanta spring race crowd, and as cold as
it was better than I thought.
I thought it was a pretty good crowd, right? Yeah. I mean,
it didn't look bad. All things considered, considering it was wickedly cold and uncomfortable, and the wind, it made it feel even colder. I wouldn't want to come sit in this and watch it. It was just walking around, and you didn't have a hat on, your head, like you could just feel it on your face. So it was much better than I thought today. And that's saying something for this track and this market, because this is really for a long time now been a market that hasn't responded well to NASCAR, even when it had just one date. So I was pleasantly surprised.
So, you know, from the Marcus Smith SMI perspective, you're looking at your ticket sales going, hey, well, look, I mean, this was, we got people here. There's more of a buzz about this. We're saying, hey, look, I see Corey LaJoie is finishing fourth. I see a really exciting last 44 laps between two future Hall of Famers. I see some wrecks and crashes that we can put on the commercials. I'm calling this a win.
Great finish. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so again, my, you know, admittedly, my perspective is different, but I could see why.
You're not jaded, are you?
I just feel like I'm every year I become just a little bit more old school and traditionalist or whatever, for whatever reason.
You're like the angry old man just screaming at the kids.
But I try to keep an open mind too. Like I'm not sitting here trying to poke holes in this racing, you know, the last 44 laps and the quality and say, you know what? I just can't enjoy it. It sucks. I mean, I'm saying like, hey, like the product we saw at the end there was, that was good. That was good stuff. And I mean, if I was going to sit there and I was going to vote on the poll tomorrow, I mean, was this a good race? I mean, if you just, yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah, I would vote it, that it was a good race because, you know, yeah, the first couple stages are boring, but you could say that for a lot of races. You did get green flag pit stops, which I thought added a little bit of, you know, intrigue to it. Like, oh, what, you know, how are they going to do this with that long pit road and all that stuff? You know, there's some different names up there. You take that. So, yeah, I mean, it's, again, I still feel like I would prefer to see like an intermediate track race, but you're shaking your head at me.
It's people have this, like, those are the last few Atlanta races were not the most exciting for the most part. Like there was occasionally some good moments.
What about that Kurt Busch beating Kyle one? That was a pretty good one.
That was one of the exceptions. Like that was it. But a lot of the time though, they were runaways, you know. The one before that, Kyle Larson dominated until the last like 10 laps. I mean,
and
it's
then
just,
Blaney tracked him down, though. I mean, so that was interesting.
He did. But up until that, though, I get it. Like there was, you know, and so I just feel like, I don't know. I just feel like people have this revisionist history about this place.
You're right. I mean, Atlanta, especially before the stages, there was some really dog.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Atlanta, you're just like, oh my gosh, these long, long, long green flag runs that were just really, really strung out. I think there's that Jeff Gordon story, right? Where, he tells the story where it was like one of his first races in the Fox booth and he was all pumped up for Atlanta weekend, you know, where it's gonna be like, he's going up in the booth and he's all excited. Like, this is going to be amazing. I can't wait for you guys to see this and talk about how great the racing is going to be. And he gets up there and sees it from the bird's eye fan view. Uh-huh. And he's like, oh, like this isn't so great, you know? But it was great inside the car and the drivers loved it. But from the broadcasting point of view, what do I say here? Kind of thing. So, I get it. And you're making good points, but this is such you know, this change comes with such permanence and I'll drop it after this, but it just, again, wouldn't you have loved to see last year, if this car had been, even if it was a repave, how would this car have done with the next gen? Sure. As good as that's been on intermediates, I think you could have just as good of a race, an exciting race, and feel like, hey, we saw the best drivers in the world have more control in their hands.
Fair point.
And, you know, fair point. I
will never argue that. I think they jumped. I agree with you on that 100%. And I do feel like they jumped to the reconfiguration a year early. Like they could have held off and said, look, we're going to patch it one more time. We're going to get the next gen car on the surface and just see what it's like and then make a decision. And before we do that, and now you can't go back. You spent all this money and you did all this reconfiguration and like, you can't like flip a switch. It's not going back. I just wish they would have waited a year.
So let's talk about, you know, what this means for Joey Logano, because, you know, it's easy to say, well, hey, Joey Logano, defending champion. I mean, it's not like his winless streak was that long. He just won in November. He won the championship. But then you remember, okay, well, this year starts and Chevy comes out and wins the first four races. And not only that, but the Fords don't really look good at all for the most part. And Logano's team in particular, at two of the tracks where they won last year that was so key for them at the championship, really had deflating setback weeks at Vegas and Phoenix. And you're like, wow, this is a different year for the 22 team. So for them to come out and win, you know, now this, it's not like this is going to change the season for them in that, like, they're suddenly going to run great at, you know, another intermediate track or something, or the downforce tracks. But this was very important for them in that they capitalized on a chance to get a win, at the speedways where the Fords are pretty good. because you don't know how many of those opportunities they're going to have this year. They've locked themselves into the playoffs. They take pressure off themselves. But had that not gone that way, they're not going to have as many chances to win this year as they did last year, in my opinion.
I mean, they haven't been great. They came within, what, a few feet of winning the Daytona 500?
Those are speedways, though. I'm talking about at the super speedway.
I understand that. And they finished 11th, and they were bad at Phoenix, but they still finished 11th. Joey said, too, that they had just issues on pit road. Like, they weren't great at this time a year ago. Like, they were okay. They were fine. But they weren't a team that really hit its stride until late spring. And it was after the disastrous race at Dover. They won at Darlington, which was good. Hang on, I'm trying to figure out that right. They struggled through the first part of the year. Like, they weren't great. They won the Clash, but it doesn't count. And they were up and down. They just couldn't figure out this car. And they had a horrible race at Dover, and they had a come to Jesus meeting, Paul Wolf and Joey Logano after that. And it kind of righted their season. And I think it was the week after Dover, they won at Darlington. And so, like, it's in at no point last year did you ever really kind of feel like Joey Logano was kind of one of the guys to beat for the championship. He was certainly in the mix, and it wasn't a surprise, but he really didn't – it wasn't like he was going out and dominating. And he really didn't start clicking until the playoffs. So this is a long-winded way of saying, like, it's early, and I'm just not ready – I wasn't ready to, like, worry about their performance or anything like that. Like, there was going to be ample opportunity for this team to get wins.
I see it differently. I think last year was a bit of – you know, last year was an anomaly in that everybody was trying to figure out the new car. Everybody, you know, that's why there were so many different winners. There was teams going up and down because someone would hit on a setup and it would take others a few weeks to figure it out. This year so far, at least from what we saw in the West Coast swing, it feels like there's been, you know, trends that we've talked about, you know, last couple of weeks, and you're starting to see patterns emerge. And one of those patterns was that the Fords are simply not as good this year. You know, Harvick has, you know, shown flashes obviously, but, you know, with the new nose that they got, it seemed to change things for them. And particularly Logano's team was sort of an indicator of that. So you're right in that, you know, last year, all the focus was on like Chase Elliott. And we were talking about him as the big championship, you know, favorite guy. Cause he, you know, ran away with the regular season and all those things like that. And it wasn't necessarily Logano talk, but we weren't necessarily talking about anyone being the threat other than Elliott because it was so wide open. But I feel like, with the new noses, it just, again, aside from the super speedways, Fords don't seem to have, you know, what the Chevys have, at least. So remember, we've been saying, I mean, like Chevy, then Toyota maybe step behind, and then the Fords. Look at how, you know, the struggles of somebody like a Chase Briscoe. You don't seem to be buying this.
No, I don't, because again, it's early. Things change. And a year ago, the Fords and then Penske were not good on intermediate tracks, but they got better as the year went along, and they ended up winning in Las Vegas. We haven't been to a road course yet, so we don't know what that's going to be like. We don't know how the Fords are going to race on there. We haven't been to a short track other than Phoenix, which I don't consider that a short track. We still got there's ample opportunity for them to get wins along the way and to see where they're at and to make gains. I'm not as good as Chevy is running right now, and they look very, very good. But I think it's just there's so much that can happen and so much can change. And I don't want to assume that what Chevy is now is what Chevy's going to be 5 months from now.
Yeah. I mean, I like your optimism in that I want there to be, you know, some, I don't want to go into every race going, oh, I think I know who's going to win this one, because it's more fun when there's a bunch of different winners, right? And you don't know who's going to win every week. That was what was so enjoyable about last year. But I, you know, as Paul Wolf said in the press conference today, there's only so much you can do, you know, setup wise, if you just don't have it aero with your car, you know, aero wise, your hands are sort of tied. And Logano was even saying, like, yeah, we can win any week, but we have to be perfect. We have to be absolutely perfect. So, the Chevys, you know, the Hendrick cars, for instance, don't have to be perfect when they, you know, every single week. They can overcome some things. What?
They do have to pass Tech, though, and stop getting 100-point penalties.
They didn't even go through Tech last week before they got this stuff pulled. But we'll talk about that a little bit later in the episode. I do want to talk about Keselowski. You know, in addition to having a great run, how, you know, first of all, it seemed like he handled it really well. That could have been devastating because, you know, he really wants to win badly. I liked his comment about, hey, this is what happens when you have good respect for racing, all that stuff. But how do they overcome this? Is it that easy to shake it off? Because that, I mean, you could say what you want, but having control of the race, going head to head with your former teammate, having a chance to make a huge statement for your organization, get a ton of momentum, make the playoffs, you know, stick it to your former team, all those things. and TJ Majors too. I mean, he's been open on the Door Bumper Clear about how, like, he feels like, you know, hey, he got kind of fired essentially by Logano because Logano wanted to work with Coleman Presley, you know? And, you know, I'm sure that would have been a big, like, we got this. How do you recover from that? Do they just put it aside and go on?
I think you have to, because you can't wallow in this. And I think there's too many positives to take away from this, and that this team has been running well. And you look at the results, and before today, they had one top 10 finish, but they have been consistently running in the top 10. They just haven't been able to finish races. Today, they put together largely a complete race. They didn't have any issues in pit road. They didn't have any mistakes. Brad drove a great race. Build off of this. And you take away from this is saying, listen, we are bringing, we said this at, might have been Phoenix, it might have been Las Vegas, but it was like Brad has been the top running forward a few times this year. That's not something you could say for that organization in a while. And they're doing it on non-super speedway tracks. That's impressive. So the pieces, it feels like that you can legit see what they're doing there. I think you look at this and say, this was a great run. We had a fast car. We're doing this on a consistent basis. Like, we keep doing this. We keep knocking on the door. It's going to happen. Yeah, everything you said is right. Like, it's going to sting. We lost to my former teammate. It sucked. All of those reasons. But I think if you take a step back and you're trying to look at the overall big picture, like, there are a lot of reasons to be encouraged about where this team is at and what they're doing. And it doesn't feel like, with the caveat it's early, it doesn't feel like this team is going to slide anywhere. They feel like they're kind of here.
Speaking of the top finisher for a manufacturer, Chevy's top finisher today was Corey LaJoie. Now, of course, for us to be like, oh, yeah, well, we thought he would have a good run. Well, yeah, everybody did. But
yeah, I wrote it. I said in The Athletic.
Right. But everybody, I mean, you look at last summer where he almost beat Chase Elliott for this race win. And
he finished fifth in the other race.
Yeah, I mean, this is clearly a great track for him. He gets it. And, you know, super speedways in general are right up his alley. But it's one thing to say, hey, I think this guy can contend. I think this guy's a chance to win. But, you know, dang, to come out and do it again says a lot. And, you know, this continues his streak of, I mean, he's off to a really good start. He is 14th in points from what I'm seeing on the monitor here. You know, he's ahead of Tyler Reddick in points. He's ahead of Bubba Wallace in points. He's ahead of Ty Gibbs in points. Of course, he's ahead of all 400 cars. I was going to say, yeah, but that's a little bit, but still, I mean,
there's an asterisk there.
Eric Jones, Austin Dillon, Chase Briscoe, Ryan
guys
Preece,
Errol Almirola.
Yeah. I mean, guys with way better, way higher powered teams, way more resources. Yeah. He is stacking his pennies right into a playoff spot right now through the first five races of the season. Only got to do it 21 more weeks, but he's in contention, which is, I mean, considering, you know, that team's history, and we were talking about, hey, Spire is basically like, you know, a Rick Ware car, right? Like those cars are not that good. They've made some of a step up, or they're just having clean races or something this year. They're performing a lot better.
That's the thing. Like the number of clean races, they're not having the mistakes. I don't have the number in front of me, but I think they had like they had double digit finishes last year of like 25th or worse. You remember how many times they had parts failures? And, you know, Corey talked about how like he just couldn't actually drive the race car that hard because he knew that he was worried about it and it wasn't set up to his liking. They're doing a great job. I don't know if they can continue this or not. It's a lot to ask. And you're going to go to road courses, and that's maybe not that team's strength. But just they're doing this, and that's really, really impressive. And for Corey, you look at the potential career opportunities that are out there and the rides that are we either know are going to be open or potentially could be open. If you're one of those teams and you're sitting there looking at this going, man, we want a guy who's going to be hungry, who's got talent and who's got experience. So we don't have to worry about those growing pains. Like, he's kind of like that turnkey driver, right? And I just think that he's doing a really good job of auditioning for himself for a bigger opportunity, because look at his results. His body of work is certainly worthy of that opportunity.
So I'm looking at Racing Reference right now, and you know, there's been some problems with updating it in a timely manner this year.
So sad. It's so frustrating.
I know, it's been really frustrating, but I think this is up to date. So it looks like Corey LaJoie's average finish this season so far is 16.0. His previous career best last year was 24.3. So through five races this year, he's finishing eight spots better on average per week than he was last year. I mean, that's a big jump, big jump. This is a guy that was 31st in points last year and has never finished better than 29th in points. And we're talking about in contention for a playoff spot. So it'd be fun to see how long they can do it. It feels like it's not going to last. I mean, it would be pretty shocking if they were in this conversation even 5 weeks from now, but it's cool to see. And your point about, you know, possibly, you know, auditioning for a better ride is well taken, because how can you look at what he's doing? We talk all the time. Who is, you know, who's a driver who is, you know, getting more out of their stuff than maybe they should be, or than the car is capable of, or the team is capable of, or whatever. Right now he's taking the finishes it has. He's being smart. And you know, I think he'd be somebody that would be very fun for NASCAR, in a more competitive ride, in a more competitive situation, because, look, he's a good personality. If he was relevant on a weekly basis, and was giving people something to talk about and mixing it up, heck yeah, that'd be great for NASCAR, in my opinion. So
I agree. He's got the personality, he's got the talent, he's somebody who deserves it. The fact that he's fought and scrapped, he's got that blue collar, you know, attitude and mentality, it resonates with fans. And I think it would be good for NASCAR to see a driver like that, have the path that he's had, end up in an opportunity where he could go and win races.
Ty Gibbs, I do want to note that he had his best career finish as well, P9, and yep. He beat the former driver of that car, Kyle Busch, by one spot today. I'm sure Kyle Busch, that was irritating to him because he never wants to lose to that car, I'm sure. And then I also want to, I'm just going through the top 10 here as far as notables. If do yourself a favor, look up, go to Twitter, or I don't know where you'd find it, but look up the in-car video of, I think it's just the last lap for Erik Jones, who ends up finishing eighth. It was, have you gotten a chance to see this yet?
I've not seen this.
Oh my gosh. After we're done with the podcast, you got to go look this up. Basically, like, I don't know how many spots he picked up, but it seemed like, I mean, close to 10 maybe. He basically goes through the middle, like on one of those, it's like one of those video game challenges where like, okay, you're starting 17th or whatever, and you have to get up into the top 10 in one lap. How are you going to do it? He like splits the middle of all these cars with huge runs, and it's his in-car camera, and he goes up the middle. It was like, wow, this is awesome. So for those of you listening, if you haven't seen this, try to go check that out.
I'm watching it right now.
Okay. What's your live reaction?
Wow. He's just going right up the middle.
Right. Like he's just...
Like you think that everybody's just kind of running, you know, running kind of the same speeds or anything. He is just, it's like he like hit the turbo button.
Yeah, exactly. He like hits the afterburners.
He just hit the turbo button. He's slicing people through the middle. Where did he come from? Where did this come from? Was who's pushing him?
I don't know. It's a good question. But
wow, good for him.
Yeah, that was.
That team's been struggling this year. Like they haven't had the same speed this year in their cars that they did a year ago, and it's not been there for them, but. This was a good run for him today.
Prioritizing your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. With AG1, just one scoop of this foundational nutrition supplement delivers your daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. With AG1, you're giving your body high-quality nutrition with ingredients that are sourced for absorption, potency, and nutrient density. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/odyssey. That's drinkag1.com/odyssey. Check it out.
Jordan, we have several different directions we could take the podcast now. We could talk about Xfinity and trucks. Namely, you know, I think we should definitely touch on the Josh Williams situation. Or we could.
What was your reaction to that?
Well, like, okay. We can go into that first, I guess.
That's what people are talking about. I guess the video of that, our friend Bob Pockers was saying that was like their number one video of all weekend or something.
Oh, I bet.
I forgot. So he said some crazy number of views.
You know, it's. You don't often see someone publicly sort of stick it to the man in terms of NASCAR. Now, you might hear driver comments. Well, I mean, yes, he did.
He may have stuck it to the man like for a second, but he was quickly put back in line.
Well, of course, there's consequences that come with sticking it to the man in NASCAR. No doubt. I mean, the moment he did that, you can
see. He was singing a much different tune when he came out of the hauler last night.
Logano was saying what I was thinking in real time on the podcast on the broadcast going, oh, no. Oh, no. Because while it was a really cool moment and he's flashing the deuces, walking away, waving. Parks his car.
You got to do the hair thing too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a little bit.
That was really cool. But at the same time, you're going, oh my God, he's going to get suspended or he's going to get something. Right. We don't know. I mean, doing this real time Sunday night, we don't know what the penalty is going to be on Tuesday, but it would be pretty shocking if there wasn't a penalty. But I do think though that there was something. Well, let me ask you, why do you think why did that resonate with people when he did that?
I mean, one, people hate NASCAR. I mean, fans of NASCAR, there's a large contingent of fans who don't like NASCAR and think they make every wrong move, don't like the officials, don't like how they call races, and don't like this and that. Also, Josh Williams, a little bit of a cult personality hero kind of thing. Small guy, you know, driver for a small team, works really hard, works on his own equipment. You know, that kind of resonates with people. And you have this guy who because of a questionable rule that a lot of people didn't know. I honestly did not know it either, though it is a rule. Who like, oh, that's bogus. That's crap. That's NASCAR, you know, screwing up. And then this guy who's like, screw that. I'm not going to take it. Like, yeah, people are going to, that's going to make him that's going to make him a hero for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, somewhat different interpretation. I don't think it's that people hate NASCAR necessarily. It's that I feel like they feel like the little guy was wronged, right? Mm-hmm. He got in a crash in a total wreck fest, caution fest of a race. And they try to repair his car because he needs to get back out there. They put the bear bond on a cold day, flies off. And they're saying, instead of like, hey, you know, whatever, come fix it. You know, it's like, go to the garage, you're parked because you had, you know, your repairs fly off or whatever. Right. And, you know, how many times have we seen bigger teams do something? And I mean, last year in the Roval race, Chase Elliott, 2 years ago in the Roval race after.
Trust me, I remember the whole Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick thing very well.
Yes. 2 years ago in the Roval race, Chase Elliott's bumper is flapping around. Everybody knows it's going to come off. And not only does it come off, but it gives him a season-saving caution. So, you know, it's like, okay, well, they can do that. But Josh Williams, who's trying to make repairs and, you know, keep his plucky team out there and just get the finish, you know, in a race that has already been a disaster caution-wise, you're going to say to him, yeah, you're the problem. You're the one that's, you know, you're
called making an example, Jeff.
Exactly. So they feel like he was being made an example of, and instead of just taking it, he was like, no, So I think that's why people liked it, because, you know, when they feel like someone is getting disrespected, like the little guy's getting stomped on or taken advantage of, or has to play by different rules, people are like, yeah, you tell him, you give the deuce a sign,
like,
you know?
We see it the same way. Like, I mean, I do think a part of it though is like, it is NASCAR too. I mean, it's, you can't deny that. And it's, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I go back and forth. I get why the rule is the rule. Like, let's be clear, that there is a rule that says that.
That says what?
That if you are in a caution and you come down and you're on the clock and you make a repair, and then you have a piece of debris fall off your car, you can be penalized. NASCAR has the discretion to park you.
Well, okay. Yeah, but how often do they do that? You didn't even know that was a rule? I didn't know that was a rule. Josh Williams didn't know that was a rule.
I didn't know it was a rule. Yeah. And I don't have the answer to this question, and I wish I did. I wish I knew how long it's been in the rule book for, because I don't know the answer to that either. I wonder, though, and I had this discussion with Dustin Long from NBC Sports today and a couple other people. I do wonder if the truck race hadn't been what the truck race was, use whatever descriptor you want to use for that, and the Xfinity race hadn't been going the way it was, where there just was like a crash fest. And I almost feel like, and they shouldn't, and let me just make that clear, NASCAR should never operate, no sports league should. I just wonder if like NASCAR like got hit its breaking point, like, geez, this has got to stop. Like, we just cannot keep having this race stop for silly things.
You wonder. There's no doubt. There's no doubt that if that race was not a caution fest already to that point, if that was like the first caution of the race and then his repair had come off, they wouldn't have been like, hey, get off the track. We've had enough of this kind of thing.
I'm pretty confident that's the case. I don't want to say definitively, but I'm pretty confident. Yeah.
I mean, I think we've both been around long enough to realize that sometimes the officiating has to go with the flow of the race. If there's not very many cautions and something happens, somebody brushes the wall or there's debris or something, you get more of a quick caution. Where if there's been a lot of cautions and it's been, oh my gosh, this race is so herky jerky and, you know, oh, there's no flow to this, and something happens, like even a spin, we've seen even with a spin sometimes, they'll let it go because they're like, nah, we've got to get this race going. We've got to get it rolling again. That's just the nature of, you know, directing a race, in my opinion. So I don't think there's any doubt that if it had been a cleaner race up to that point, then, you know, they don't penalize him, in my opinion, but.
I think you're right. I do think you're right. I don't want to say definitively because I just don't know, but I do think you're right.
Well, anyway, it was interesting to see, you know, Denny Hamlin, David Reagan, looks like Chris Buescher, several people came out on Twitter and said, hey, I'd love to help pay the fine. The inevitable fine. So, but I, you know, then I see from Freddie Kraft's tweet, which was not as veiled as your tweet, the tweet about you when you were going on Door Bumper Clear, but it looks like Josh Williams is going to be on Door Bumper Clear.
He is going to be on there tomorrow.
So, you know, maybe he'll say, hey, Josh, I don't know if you know this, but NASCAR gets mad at things that are said on podcasts. Ask Denny Hamlin. So, you know, might want to watch your wallet on that one too. But anyway,
just go scorched earth.
Yeah. So speaking of that, let's just transition now, because sort of the two hot topics of the week were the double penalties that came down. One, you know, one we had already talked about extensively on the Phoenix podcast, which was the Hendrick thing. You know, we had said, look, I mean, it seems like pretty good chance they're going to get in trouble. Pretty good chance they could get 100-point penalties. I mean, that was not a surprise at all based on what happened.
No.
The other one, the Hamlin Ross Chastain thing, I'm not even sure we mentioned it on last week's episode, or didn't even, you know, because
we talked about how they got together. I think we talked about how they got together in the last lap and they both slid backward, but I don't think we talked about anything beyond that because no one knew anything.
Yeah, we didn't think it was retaliation or. Right. Yeah. I mean, at that moment. But anyway, let's talk about just go through the Hendrick one first. First of all, I agree with the call, as did you. It sounded like from the column you wrote on The Athletic. Based on my understanding so far, I think that NASCAR did what they had to do, because from our understanding, again, we knew the teams knew this was an issue. NASCAR knew this was an issue, and NASCAR proactively, even though it's not good that teams are having problems with parts and that they're manufactured inconsistently. Nobody's saying, well, that's fine. Who cares? Like, nobody's saying that. I'm not saying that. And that needs to be addressed. But it is still early with this part and with this car in general. And, you know, I think NASCAR had said reasonably, hey, give us some time. It's the same for everybody right now. In the meantime, don't mess with this. Okay. Well, mm-hmm. Hendrick, even based on Chad Knauss's own comments, said, hey, look, we're going to make this fit. We're going to make it fit. Now, I would agree it's not a performance advantage necessarily, but you can't do it though.
Doesn't matter.
They said, don't touch this. And they said, well, we're going to touch it. So, okay.
Like, I don't, yeah. Like, you admitted you did it. Like,
I mean, now I also think that there is a chance that they could very well win on appeal because,
oh yeah,
you know, they have a case that like, hey, now we have to take these parts. NASCAR knew these parts weren't good. And, you know, we made adjustments to the parts to make them fit, whatever. I mean, okay, you know, I don't know how the appeals panel will see it or what all will happen. But in terms of the call that NASCAR made, the severity of the penalties, being in line with other penalties along in the same category of messing with a single source supplier part, I'm fine with it and I agree with it. And I think Hendrick knowingly did something and they have to deal with the consequences. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious to see how this appeal, because there is a pathway where I could see them winning this appeal. One, it happened on a Friday. They actually hadn't been on the track yet. You know, you take Chad at his word, like they thought it was a inspection was voluntary basically, and that kind of thing. They said in their statement they're gonna miscommunication. You know, they're citing all of the ways that like an RFK won at the penalty appeal a year ago, right? Or got out of this, you know. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, from what I understand, like this, I mean, it's pretty opening. God, I mean, like they did something to this. Like, I mean, Chad said it, talked to enough people in the garage, like this was not a secret. What I haven't been able to figure out was whether this was completely a coincidental, you know, NASCAR, you know, coincidentally went and took these parts from the Hender cars, like they say, or there might have been tipped off by somebody or not. That's the question I'm still trying to figure out.
Well, I think part of it was that, you know, they had done the Phoenix test and there was a lot of chatter about these parts. And I think whether I don't know the answer to that, but, you know, I think it's very, very reasonable to think that, hey, we told the teams this, we had already been in communication about it. Let's just go make sure. Okay.
Sure.
And I also think that the whole argument about, well, inspection's voluntary on Fridays and we hadn't even presented it for inspection yet, or, you know, they hadn't gone through inspection yet, you know, but I think too that I'm not sure the exact wording, but I believe there's something in the rule book that's essentially like, if the garage is open and there's inspectors around
in the garage,
yeah, we can come take any part we want. We can come look at the part. You can't, I don't think just because you haven't submitted it for inspection doesn't mean you can have illegal parts in.
No, your car is supposed to be quote unquote legal basically once you unload it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I get Hendrick's side of it and I'm sure it's frustrating to the teams, but once you do, if it is sort of the same for everybody, which again, it's weird to say same for everybody because we're talking about inconsistently manufactured parts here that some fit, some don't fit maybe. So maybe by nature, it's not the same for everybody. But if NASCAR is saying, we know this is a problem across the field, don't do anything, then if you adjust them, you have not made it the same for everybody. You have essentially given yourself an advantage, whether that's a performance advantage or not, because you know other people's don't fit right, correctly. So anyway, we'll see what happens with this. I really don't have a feel for how the appeal will go, but either way, it seems like you and I are in agreement on this penalty and how it came down. The other one, I don't think we are in agreement.
No.
Okay. So Denny Hamlin gets penalized for intentional wrecking after going on Actions Detrimental, his podcast, and saying that he was going to take Chastain with him. He also said on his podcast, by the way, this was on the last lap. There was no caution for this and nobody else was involved or affected. No other cars. Afterwards, as Hamlin said on the podcast, and Ross admitted to or acknowledged to you and the media who were at the media bullpen. They had a conversation. They agreed to essentially a truce going forward. They worked it out amongst themselves. So it was essentially a self-policing incident, which is what we hear all the time from NASCAR, self-policing garage for this type of stuff. They agreed to race each other forward, you know, with a clean slate going forward. And, you know, they seem to have reached an agreement. Then NASCAR steps in because of what Denny says on the podcast. I very much disagree with this. Let's hear why you agree with it.
I don't fundamentally disagree with you. Like, I get it. Like, it's let boys be at it. Let them go out and settle it. You're going to have this edict. I get it. And you're going to penalize him because he made some silly comment on a podcast and admitted it. Like, if you're not going to investigate it on your own and do it, just because he says it on the podcast, it feels like now you did something wrong. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Like, you should have let your drivers be able to freely speak their mind unless you're making threats or derogatory comments or something like that. And in this instance, this is all about what NASCAR is supposed to be about, is feuds and rivalries and guys racing hard. And sometimes you cross a line and you push your guy into the wall and that kind of thing and all of that. But the other part of this where I probably differ from you is, like, this has been going on for almost a year. This started in June, the weekend after Memorial Day. This started in 2022. Like, how long does this need to go on? And Denny has had ample opportunity to get revenge and all of that. Like, and he's upset about what happened at the Clash. Like, okay, first of all, exhibition race on a quarter mile track. There was guys driving over their heads across the board in that race, doing things that they probably shouldn't have done. Let's just back off a little bit, okay? And so, like, you've had all of these opportunities. You go back to Gateway a year ago. Like, Denny did, he had an opportunity there. You could make a case he got Ross back at Pocono when he shoved him in the wall. Like, how long does this need to go on for before NASCAR is going to step in and say, you know what, enough's enough? And when you make a comment like that and you say, yeah, I did it, like, you're kind of forcing NASCAR's hand. You're kind of pushing them in a corner a little bit of, yeah, you're letting this go on and I'm going to get away with it. Like, they're going to respond. Like, I don't know why you felt – I don't understand why he felt the need to come out and say, I did that. Like, what did you think was going to happen?
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Okay, there's so much there. So first of all, you're saying we want these guys to lie. We want them to, if they do something, absolutely do not tell the truth.
No. When,
yes. No. Why did he come out and say this? It would have been the same thing had we asked him post-race.
You don't have to lie about it. You just don't talk about it.
Okay.
You don't have to. He didn't get asked about it either. He would have never gotten asked about this.
He would have got asked about it in the media bullpen this week. Then what happens?
He didn't get asked about it at Phoenix after it happened.
Because there was hardly any media there because the entire media corps has been decimated. The only people standing there were Bob and Dustin. And once they saw them having an amicable conversation and having a long conversation, they left to go talk to other people who were more bigger storylines.
There is no, you don't have to lie about it. You can just say it's over with. It's a race. There's a lot of ways to answer that question without having to outright lie.
Okay. So again, you're saying don't be honest. Okay. Put the lie part aside. If you want to frame it a different way, don't be honest about what happened. We're at the, whoever's asking you a question, whether it's media or you're on your podcast or you're on a TV interview, do not be honest about it because that will get you in trouble. But the actual action, that's not going to get you in trouble unless you actually say why you did it. That's weird to me. That's very odd, first of all. Second of all, and especially in a time when NASCAR is struggling for star power. NASCAR is struggling for drivers to speak their minds. We want to see the personalities. And again, I've heard the argument, well, it's not a personality thing. It's not a personality thing. It is, though. He has a podcast, okay? And so you have a podcast where you're going to say, hey, I'm going to give you guys the behind the scenes of the sport, and I'm going to be honest with you guys, and I'm going to tell you what's going on. I'm going to sort of give you a peek behind the curtain. So to then go on the podcast where you're billing yourself as this and then say, oh, yeah, I don't really want to talk about it. I'm not really going to say what happened. You know, he just said, okay, this is what it was. And you're asking Jordan, how long is this expected to go on? It wasn't anymore. That was the end of it. According to both drivers, they both said, we came to agreement. That was the truce. If anything, NASCAR didn't need to step in after that because they've solved it among themselves. It took a while because...
Yeah, for the record, though, Denny has said that this was, is alluded to the fact that this was over before, and it wasn't, obviously.
No, I don't. I've never heard that. I've never heard him say, we're done with it. Listen, let's go back, okay? So the Gateway thing, for instance, I think it's a very... You know, after Denny was wrecked at Gateway, he comes back on the track. He's laps down, right? He knew at the time that since he was laps down, NASCAR's ever since the Kenseth Logano thing, we know if you're laps down, you're not racing for a position, you better not wreck somebody, right? That's no-no. That's definitely a rule, okay?
Great. So wasn't lapped down at Pocono.
He couldn't get him there. At Pocono, nobody's ever... sort of definitively come out and said that was the revenge.
He said that. He has said that. Denny Hamlin has said he pushed him into the wall.
If you go, first of all, did they ever make contact? He drove him into the wall and let Ross wreck himself into the wall in that situation.
Yes. He basically shoved him in the wall.
If you go back to our podcast last year, which was one of our most listened to podcasts ever, by the way, because we found out about Denny Hamlin's DQ. If you go back and listen to that, we, at the time, argued about, was that the revenge? And I was like, I don't think that was the revenge because he raced him hard. That was hard racing. That wasn't, I'm getting you back.
He's admitted later that he did that and that that was like payback.
He said, yeah, I'm going to race him hard and make him put himself in the wall. But he never got him back. Then the playoffs start, right? And Denny wisely said, look, it's not worth it to me doing anything in the playoffs. And we talked all playoffs long. He's not going to do anything now because they're both still alive. They're both going for a Final Four spot. He can't afford to get into a rivalry. So then, you know, the page turns this offseason, you know, to this season. The clash happens, and he gets bumped into again. So he's like, oh, you know, he's looking at it from, okay, well, this is still not over. I guess I'm still going to – he still hasn't learned his lesson. I guess I still owe him one. And so he picked a spot, which, in my opinion – you heard complaints all weekend from the bullpen. Like Harvick said something, Kyle Busch said something. They didn't like the Pocono incident because that caught up other people. And Keselowski said this too. When other people get caught up in your thing, that's when it's time to step in, right? It was the last lap of a Phoenix racer racing for whatever, both going backwards, 9th or 10th at the time or whatever. He puts one car in the wall along with himself. They both lose spots. Then they come to a truce. They agree to it. It's over. So that to me is like, why is NASCAR needing to step in here? The only reason is, in my opinion, is because they don't like Denny Hamlin. They've wanted to, you know, Denny Hamlin's been a thorn in their side for longer than he's had a feud with Ross Chastain now. I mean, you know, as soon as Denny gives them the opportunity, and maybe it was foolish on his part to
maybe.
Well, hey, maybe if they didn't get him last year after he basically said that like Steve O'Donnell should get fired or something, we need a leadership change after the Talladega or whatever.
Starting at the top. Yeah.
Starting at the top. They let him speak his mind on that and they never did anything. But, you know, I assume if he's going to give them an opening, I think they were probably going to do something. But here's where my biggest problem with this is. And all the Denny stuff aside, this particular rivalry aside, the incident aside, what it comes down to me is this is not consistent. This is not a consistent penalty. And I don't know where the line is now, because if you're going to talk about, okay, you cannot intentionally wreck someone in retaliation for another incident. Kevin Harvick in an elimination race at the Roval, we just talked about the Chase Elliott Harvick thing from 2 years ago. In an elimination race, intentionally wrecks Chase Elliott. There was no doubt. Now, did he admit it? He didn't come out and say, I got him back for that. But there was no doubt, no doubt that was in retaliation for the Bristol thing, right? Was there a penalty? No, there was no penalty. No, they didn't do anything. Okay.
They did. I mean, they had a powwow right after that.
A powwow? Did they fine him? Did they take points away? They took points away from Denny Hamlin for this. Did they fine him $50,000 or whatever? I mean, okay. So the next thing is, how is this different from any other incident? In terms of, Logano at Darlington last year, right? I was pretty fired up about that at the time. William Byron's leading the race. Logano said, hey, he got into me on that restart and I didn't like that. So I got him back. He said, okay. I got him back. I was going to return the favor. That was an admission. If you're looking for an admission, that was an admission.
They're racing hard for the win. That is the ethos of NASCAR. Like, it wasn't like I'm sliding back and my day is over. Like Denny said, my day was going sideways. I was going to finish in the teens, and I had opportunity. Logano and Byron were racing for a win. There is a difference between racing for a win and contact. Yes, there is.
Logano was not racing him for a win. He drove into that corner at Darlington.
He literally was racing him for the win. What are you talking about?
He didn't race him. He just booted him out of the way into the wall.
Okay. They literally were racing for the win.
That wasn't racing. He just said, I'm going to retaliate. I'm going to get you back for what happened earlier.
Hard racing. It may be across the line.
That took no talent on his part. He drove in there until he hit Byron, moved him out of the way, and then went on to win the race. And then he got out of the car afterward and said, I did that on purpose. I knocked someone into the wall on purpose for something they did earlier. Denny Hamlin said, I knocked someone into the wall on purpose for something they did earlier. Denny Hamlin gets fined 25 points, $50,000. Joey Logano gets a trophy and no penalty. So again,
right.
I'm just bringing up, there's probably a zillion examples with little nuances or whatever, but where's the line? How does a competitor know now what is okay and what's not? Unless they admit, is it just, they admitted it?
Competitors don't have any issues. So drivers had a meeting with NASCAR this week. And from my understanding, do you know how many questions about this went on in that meeting? Not many, if any. Like, there's not really a concern about a line about where they are. Like, I talked to driver. Like, a lot of them said, like, I get it. Like, I understand it. Like, there's not really this, there's not a whole lot of confusion or misinterpretation about what happened. Like, some drivers said, but a lot of them also said, like, I get it.
Martin Truex Jr. said,
Martin Truex Jr. was one of the drivers who said there was a little bit of confusion.
Yes, I'm looking for his quote. He said, driving through a guy is driving through a guy. Where's their line in the sand? What is a penalty and what's not? You can't pick and choose. You've got to make a rule if you're going to do it. And that's something that I think would be an easier way to officiate. Kyle Busch says, Brexton, his son, knows that you can't hit somebody, because if you hit somebody at that level,
you're talking about the general, you get sent to the back.
He was talking about,
yes, they were.
If you hit somebody on the track, you get sent to the back. Doesn't matter the reason. And that's how it is at short tracks, right?
I don't disagree with that.
Okay. So is that what needs to happen in NASCAR?
That's a different argument.
Why?
So if you want to start interpreting contact in general, that's fine. But
is that what needs to happen? Because this is being officiated inconsistently, in my opinion.
Hang on.
Okay.
If you want to have that conversation, that's fine. But that is a larger conversation about basically the mentality on the racetrack now, whether there's considerations, whether there's gentleman's code and agreements and all of that stuff. And, you know, Kyle Busch was very adamant that it's not been that way for a long time and that it can't be. Truex said that as well. Like, I don't know. You hear this from drivers a lot, and maybe there is. Maybe you need to have a hard and fast rule of if you're involved, if you cause an accident or you're involved in an accident, you have to go to the back. Like, you see it on short tracks. If that's, maybe that would curb it. And I think it was Harvick, or maybe it was Kyle Busch. I think it was Kyle Busch that said it, which was, with as hard as it is to pass now, like, getting sent to the back would be a deterrent. That if you feel like in NASCAR, there has been an overabundance of dirty driving and aggressiveness, and there's too many incidents and all of this stuff, I can hear the argument of why this should be the case. You go back to the Clash, like that, there certainly should have been more, you know, more heavy-handed officiating in that race of saying, listen, you've been involved in how many incidents? Like, we are going to have to, like, you've got to start yanking guys and doing something to deter that, because that you can't have races like that. I'm fine if you want to have that conversation, if you want to talk about the code out there and whether that there needs to be something done or not. But I think that the Denny Hamlin thing doesn't fall underneath the code. At like some point, you just have to say, like, enough. You've had your opportunities. You've had how many races since Gateway? How many? And you haven't done anything? Like, enough's enough.
So I think that if you had a rule where you sent people to the back for any sort of contact, that would be the least controversial type of way to officiate it, because it would be like, well, he spun that guy whether he meant to or not, so he's going to the back. However,
yeah,
that is completely against the soul of NASCAR and completely against everything we've seen out of NASCAR, the direction NASCAR's been going over the last two decades, right? So I'm actually against that. I do not want to see that rule. What I want is to see, well, right. What I want is to just see it officiated consistently, which has been self-policing garage. That's how it's been. You know, you can talk about the code and respect and all that stuff, guys running into each other. That's fine. NASCAR hasn't done anything. NASCAR didn't do anything to Ty Gibbs last year when he rammed Brandon Jones out of the way for a final four spot at Martinsville and all that stuff, wrecked his own teammate. There was no penalty for that. There was no, you know, he didn't get sent to the back. He got the win. And that was for, you know, again, a final four spot, you know, a huge, crucial, potential career-changing moment. So if that's the way that NASCAR is going to go, that's fine. Just when somebody says, oh, yeah, I put this guy into the wall on a podcast, don't take any action. Just let it play out. That's all. That's why I disagree with the penalty, because I think it opened up too much.
It's not a boys have at it. It's not like it's a forever umbrella thing, because as you have seen, like, you can't just say, oh, we let them police themselves. Like, no, at some point you do have to have some element of control on this, and you do have to draw a line in the sand and saying enough is enough.
Well, so when are you allowed to get somebody back? If somebody wrecks you, if I wrecked you, Jordan, four times,
I think the statute of limitations on this one has expired.
Says who? Says he just.
You just asked me what I thought, and I just told you. I think the statute of limitations, we're going on a year on this now.
But he just got wrecked again at the Clash.
For an exhibition race, where everybody was bouncing off of everybody.
So you're like, just, so an exhibition race is like when you go to Vegas, and what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and nothing carries over.
I think the fact you're putting these guys in a quarter mile racetrack in an exhibition race, there is guys up and down that order who are running like crazy. If you're going to carry a grudge from what happened at the Clash, like you need to probably reevaluate.
What's the answer to your question though? When am I allowed to get somebody back? I wreck you four times.
In a relatively short order, like you go back to the Harvick Elliott thing. Harvick didn't wait 6 months. Harvick waited, three races off the top of my head.
And he did it in a that should have been a penalty. That's manipulating the playoffs. That is costing that. I highly disagreed with that.
You can argue that Elliott manipulated the playoffs too, then, by holding up Harvick.
I disagree with any sort of. First of all, Harvick's retaliation was way outsized compared to what Elliott did. You know that.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but I mean, it's.
When are you allowed to get somebody back? I mean, you're saying that by your standards, that once the season ends, the previous season ends, it's a clean slate for everybody, and any incidents that happen.
It depends on when the incident happened. But when an incident happened at the beginning of June, and here we are in middle of March.
So you don't want any rivalries? Right. You want every rivalry to start over every year? No rival NASCAR, no rivalries. No, we don't want that. We want to nip
That's
this
ludicrous.
In the bud.
Stop. Just stop. That's ludicrous.
Well, you're saying this has been going on for a year now. Let's move on. Right?
No. You can have a rivalry without having you can have a rival. So rivalries only involve like crashing into each other. Is that how this works?
Well, I would think that's a big part of them in NASCAR.
It's not. So tell me about the Pearson Petty rivalry, because they had only a few handful of incidents.
I tell you what, Pearson and Petty is in quite a different era. If you crash somebody in Pearson Petty era, you might die.
Okay. So tell me about the Earnhardt Gordon rivalry and how many times they crash each other.
Jordan.
I'll wait.
Jordan. Jordan.
I'm waiting.
You're losing. You're losing the focus here. NASCAR has all built their entire marketing plan.
I didn't hear the answer.
When we tune into a race every week, we're going, oh my gosh.
You can have a rivalry.
What's going to happen this time between Ross and Denny? Who's going to get who? NASCAR on their own social channels. You can have
a rivalry without having to bang into each other every single on a regular.
But how can they build this up as a storyline? And then when somebody says, I got him back, they're like, gotcha. Ha ha. You admitted it. We got you. Like they play into this. NASCAR does as much as anybody. The TV networks, we the media, everybody. We talk a serious. They talk about it all week. Who's going to get who back? Who's even with who? Blah, 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 blah.
When you're having a bad day, or when your day is about to go sour and you're going to slide back and have a bad finish and you decide, ah, screw it, I'm just going to turn into this guy. That to me really isn't a rivalry in hard racing. It's a, I don't like that guy and I'm having a bad day, so I'm going to take it out on him. Now, if they were racing for position and they were fighting even for like sixth spot, like not even a win, but like let's say a spot in the top 10, and they're like, hey, I'm not going to cut this guy any breaks. That's great. You want that. But when you're going backwards because you're on older tires and the guys are getting going past you and you're like, screw this, I'm going to have a bad day and I'm just going to veer into you. That's not a rivalry. That's just being a petulant child.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I think that it comes down to that we slightly differ on, to me, racing someone hard is not getting them back. Hard racing is something that happens, but when someone hits your car multiple times, that opens the door for you to hit their car and get them back by hitting their car or spinning them out or wrecking.
Logano Byron thing, it happened within the context of a race. Like this Ross and Denny thing is like this drawn out thing. Like it's too much. Like it's just like you go back to Elliott and Harvick, whether you agree with it or not. Like I do think NASCAR in retrospect probably did the right thing of calling those guys together and saying, listen, we can't have this. Like it's just not like this is going to escalate to a point. It's going to be bad for everybody. And because you could see where it was going and with Harvick involved in it, like this was not, you know, like it felt like it could get ugly in a hurry. And so I think they did a good job of squelching that. And it's just like, again, like you want to race hard. If Ross would have gotten into Denny earlier in that race, so be it. Then absolutely. Then get after him. But like you're still holding a grudge for something that happened at the Clash our last year, and you're pissed because you're having your day went sideways. Like, come on.
Very good. I mean, yeah, it's a spirited debate. It'd be interesting to see what happens on Denny's appeal as well. We may not have the final word on this just
yet. Yeah, that's here's a question for you. If you're Denny, why do you appeal it?
Because you got wronged? And there's the precedent for this. Like, the precedent for this is very inconsistent. And you could point to like 10 other incidents and say, this didn't happen this time, this time, this time, this time, this time. So therefore it shouldn't happen this time.
But you could also point to incidents and say, hey, we have suspended drive. We have parked drivers. We have done different penalties for guys who've intentionally wrecked somebody before.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't like the word manipulation because I don't think Denny Hamlin was manipulating the finish of the race, but I mean, literally they suspended the guy last year for intentionally wrecking somebody. So, I mean, it's not like, if you want to talk about precedent, like you can go either way.
Larson thing was extremely dangerous.
I don't disagree, but I mean, if you're going to start saying you can't wreck somebody, my point is though, like if I'm Denny, like it's 25 points, right? Like
you're just going to sniff at that. I mean, 25 points moves him from ninth to fourth in points. That's a bunch of playoff points at the end of the year.
I'm going to snip at that. Well, he didn't lose playoff points. He only lost 25 points.
I know, but I'm saying that's playoff points because where you are in the standings.
I'm going to let it go because I just want this over with. I want to move on. I want to forget about this. And like, there's no point. And you go back to what you said about how he is continually poking NASCAR. And there's been a lot of grievances that he's – the fact that he made his comments he made last year, the fact that his team is one of, if not the most outspoken about NASCAR leadership and revenue sharing, like there's a long list of grievances that NASCAR could have against him. Like, I would just let this go. I pick and choose my battles. Like, let this go. We, you know, move on.
Well, I think that's why, because you're saying you just laid out the reasons why he might be unfairly targeted. So why would you not want to take it to an impartial appeals panel and say, hey guys, can you just see what you think? Do you think I was unfairly targeted? Yes or no?
Because if you win that, if you thought you were unfairly targeted now, wait until you lose that appeal.
Well, that's not a fair way to, then that's terrible.
What is fair about anything that NASCAR does when it comes to officiating? It's not, there's, it's littered with inconsistencies and it veers off in one direction and veers off in another.
I mean, I'm expecting
it. Talk about the Josh Williams thing. There's always,
I have some faith that it's, that they're trying to be consistent. So
I have faith too, but I mean, like,
all right.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
This was a lot of talk about that. That was interesting. Let's talk about F1 real quick before we wrap this up. I don't know if you were able to watch any of the race at all today.
Well, that's a start.
Okay. It's clearly going to be a Red Bull season. I know you haven't seen enough from Ford in NASCAR to decide whether they're going to be struggling this season, but I hope you've seen enough from Red Bull to realize that they are going to dominate this entire year, along with Fernando Alonso of Aston Martin. He looks pretty good. It is sort of the second fastest. And then I guess Mercedes and Ferrari might change each week. I don't know on who's the third fastest, but it's all Red Bull right now. But what's interesting is the dynamic between the two Red Bull cars, because Max Verstappen, despite starting 15th today, comes all the way back to finish second. And you would think, wow, he would, you know, look, he obviously wants to win, but that's a pretty good day. 1-2 finish for the team. Things are going pretty well. Max is, he set the wins record last year. He's won two straight championships. He doesn't really have a reason to be salty. However, he was sour. I didn't come here to finish second. Not happy for his teammate. You didn't really see any warmth there. He didn't even park his car on the starting line, I guess, with the other podium cars, sort of sulking afterwards. They've got to get this the reliability right. And sure, of course they do. But you know, he pretty much went against what his team was saying as well. They're asking him to run a certain lap time at the end, and they told Checo to run a certain lap time. Max went faster than that lap time on his own and didn't listen. And then he said, well, who has fastest lap, which was Checo at the time. And they said, we're not worried about that right now, Max. And he said, yeah, but I am. And then on the last lap, he went out and got it and took it from his teammate. So he has the championship points lead now, instead of his teammate, after his teammate was, let's face it, wronged last year, in the pursuit of Max's glory. And you would think that they owe him one. And it seemed like Red Bull was sort of like, all right, you know what? We're going to do by Checo this time. We're going to, you know, he's in the lead. He's got an advantage. He's going to win this race. Let's just, you know, let him have smooth sailing. Let this be his day. But Max, no interest in that whatsoever. And not going to be happy unless he's the one winning every single week. So I guess that's what we're going to be following this year for F1.
Yeah, nice to good teammate by Max. Like, it's just, it's becoming increasingly apparent. Like, he is not, I don't know how Red Bull contains him. Like, he keeps him in check. He should be unquestionably the number one driver over there. Like, it shouldn't be. And if he's in the hunt, then he should probably get the preference. But he was in the hunt today. Like, he was behind. His teammate was clearly ahead. And again, like, this is a good opportunity to just let him have a make good. In the overall scheme of things, you're the better driver. You're going to win out. Let it go. It's going to be okay. And there are just example after example and after example of him just acting like a bad teammate. And I don't know how if you're Red Bull, like, I feel like it's too late to kind of wrap your arms around it and get it under control.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care.
No.
No. I mean, that's clear. That's what I'm saying. Is like, yeah.
I mean, Christian Horner could sit down with them all he wants and say, Max, you need to do, we're going to be better. You know, we're going to work together more. Blah, blah. He's going to be like, no. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Sorry.
That's what I'm saying. It's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late. You should have nipped this in the bud a while ago. You didn't. And now it's going to this level. Like, it's too late.
Meanwhile, another clownery, you know, I don't know if you follow, this was during the race. I don't know how much of this you follow, but Fernando Alonso gets a 5-second penalty for being slightly lined up outside his starting grid box, which is what Esteban Ocon, last week at Bahrain, or 2 weeks ago in Bahrain, same thing happened to him. He had to serve a 5-second penalty, which he did. But then after the race was completed, like way later, the FIA comes out and says, well, the jack was touching the car. And so you actually didn't serve your penalty correctly. And so now it's going to be a 10-second penalty. So we're going to put George Russell on the podium. This is after they had already done the podium ceremonies. Then, like, I don't know, 2 hours after that, I guess there's been an appeal and all the stuff. Then they come out and say, well, actually, we will, you know, we didn't inform the team in time and it didn't really serve the penalty, you know, blah, blah, blah. So actually, we are going to let Alonso keep the podium spot. Disregard everything we said about the 10-second penalty. 5-second penalty is enough. Oh, sometimes the FIA, they just can't get out of their own way with this officiating stuff, you know?
No, it's nuts and it's confusing and it's over-officiated. And as you're trying to grow your sport and you're bringing in new audience, how do you explain to them what is going on? You look like buffoons. Like you can't, you talk about inconsistencies and a failure to lead. This is it.
Yeah. I, you know, it's not a good look. I mean, it's supposed to be, you know, they take themselves very, very seriously, obviously. With all their regulations and stuff, but to go back and forth on your own regulations is just what are you doing here? What's going on? Anyway, a couple more weeks, I guess, until the Australia race. But in the meantime, Gunther Steiner is going to be in the Fox booth for COTA along with Kurt Busch.
So
that's going to be fantastic. I hope they have the bleep button ready.
Oh my God, I tweeted this to our friend NASCARcasm, like. I will pay any amount of money for an uncensored feed of that. Just that's what I want. Like you give me Kurt and Gunther uncensored. Just that's all I want. I don't know friends to Clint Boyer or Mike Joy. I just want those two guys, maybe a couple bottles of the finest spirits and just have a grand old time. That's what I want.
When we were at COTA last fall for the F1 race, Haas had a little barbecue in the paddock because it was their, you know, the American team at their home race and all the stuff. And they were passing out shirts that I can't say the line from Drive to Survive on this podcast since we said we're kid friendly. But there was a swear word on it on the t-shirt, a famous Gunther Steiner line from when Kevin Magnussen had slammed his door, basically. So that was on a shirt and they were happily handing those out to everybody. So Gunther certainly owns that image and the brand, and it'll be fun to see him talking some NASCAR, and he has NASCAR, you know, experience with Red Bull and stuff. So, yeah, that'll be very, very entertaining for the broadcast. So
can't wait.
Jordan, before we go, it's time to celebrate your latest victory on the, Was It a Good Race poll. Such a resounding win last week for Phoenix when you said it was 45%, and it turned out to be 44.8%. Mega win for you. You are now undefeated on the season, 3-0. And our friend Big Joe Wall, who keeps track of these for us, he has a new statistic. I don't know if you saw his tweet this week. He has a new statistic. Instead of just adding up the total amount of points of which we've missed by, he has the average point differential that we miss our guesses by. So this year, through the three races that we've done the guesses, you are only missing by 4 percentage points, where I am missing by 10.6 percentage points. I'm way off this year, not even close. You are nailing it. You are coming so close. And your guess, he said, was the third closest score ever recorded since we've been doing the Good Race poll. So congratulations to you. You're on quite a roll.
Oh, it means so much. So much.
Now that we're on YouTube, people can see your reaction there of you, you know, pumping your fist there. Oh. So, you know.
Excuse me. I might get a little emotional.
All right. Well, what are they going to say about this Atlanta race, Jordan?
Are you judging it by the first two stages or the third stage?
That's what you have to answer as the big winner.
Uh, 62%.
Interesting.
I think the finish is going to be what people remember in the last 20, 30 laps or pretty darn good. I think that's about as good as you can get in a super speedway. Pretty good stuff.
This is really tough. You know, I would have said 30% after the first two stages.
Yeah.
And even after the wrecks, like the Chastain Harvick thing, which we didn't talk about, by the way, Chastain always gets blamed for everything, but I didn't think that was Chastain's fault at all, by the way.
That was a racing incident.
He didn't even touch him. He had packed air on his, while they're trying to draft on his real rear spoiler.
Racing. Like,
anyway, I really want to win this week, Jordan. And I'm definitely going to Price is Right you without any shame. And I'm going to say 62.1%. So there you go, buddy.
Awesome.
I love that people could see your reaction now. The eyes closed, just shaking your head. I'm just trying to
find my happy place right now.
Yeah, this has been a frustrating hour and change for you of me antagonizing you on the podcast. So very rewarding for me. I really enjoyed this podcast, but I'm sure you
have a different. It's been great. Yeah, let me tell you. Okay. It's been wonderful.
All right. Well, everybody, we're gonna get out of here while we can. We'll switch places next week. I'll be at Coda. Jordan will be maybe back behind his black backdrop with the floating head, and or whatever you want to do, Jordan. I don't know. We'll be talking about Kimi Raikkonen, Jensen Button. We'll be talking about the choose rule at road courses. We'll be talking about no stage breaks at road courses.
That's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it'll be fun. There's going to be lots to talk about next week at COTA. So everybody, listen, we appreciate you for listening, but we would even love you even more if you were willing to subscribe to The Athletic, because we're working very hard to write some good stories for you. And I mean, our F1 team, like Luke Smith, our guy, was in Saudi Arabia this week and he's going to Australia next week. Like, we're sending these guys all over the world. So, I mean, great stories are pumping out on that side. Tremendous access they have through F1 and all the availabilities that they do over there. So, you know, if you want to check out that content, definitely do so. And ours as well, you can go to theathletic.com/theteardown to subscribe. See the latest deal. I think it's like $1.99 a month right now. So anyway, all right, everybody. Thanks always for listening. We will talk to you next time on The Teardown. See you, everybody.